Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 100. Wow, I can't believe that I've reached 100 episodes of this show. This is Minute 100 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome to the, I guess you can say, the centennial episode of Season 3.
Wow, excellent. A pleasure to share it with you.
Yeah, only 32 more episodes after today before we move on to Season 4. But, you know, we'll keep that a surprise what Season 4 will be. People will have to wait. You have to wait. If it's 32 episodes, that means we got another 6 weeks till people will hear, you know, we'll hear what we've chosen to do for Season 4. So, yesterday's episode ended with about 2 seconds of John scooching himself into a room that has like tons of tiles on the walls and stuff like that. So episode 100 begins with John entering the room on his back, clearly in pain, and ends with John asking Al a very personal question. So basically, we saw John run across the... Or we assume that John ran across. You know, this was 2 days ago. Basically, you know, there was all the glass on the ground, and John had to run across it. And here we see him, you know, heaving himself into a room, sliding on his back. And you know, the minute opens up with him panting and grunting. You know, and he drags himself into this bathroom, or what looks like a bathroom, right? And then at a certain point, we see that his left foot is dragging, and there's lots of blood along the way, you know, on the floor. And there's like tons of newspaper. Do you notice that there are newspapers on the floor? Like,
oh yeah,
like what are they doing there?
And you mentioned yesterday actually about funny marks on the walls, and yeah, you can see it's a really grubby, dirty room. It's like,
yeah,
it's because it's such a modern kind of flashy looking building, you kind of wouldn't expect a room like this, but I guess they're still renovating sections of it. But it looks like some sort of, I don't know, like garbage like room as well. It's weird. It's
very strange. Yeah, but again, the floor is tiled. You know, they have like paint chips all over the floor. You know, and I doubt this all came from the shooting. You know, this must be just like one of the rooms that they're still trying to renovate. But you know, later on, we're going to counter that. Because there are things that work in that room that wouldn't be working if they were still renovating. So true. I'm not really sure. But and then after we see all this blood, you know, this blood trail move into the room, which it makes you also wonder why Hans and Carl didn't continue pursuing John. You know, they stopped shooting.
I guess they were in a rush to, I don't know.
Mm. No, especially if they think that they've injured him by shooting out all this glass. So if he's injured, that means that, you know, he should be easier prey. And especially Carl, who, you know, he has a vendetta against John. Mm-hmm. You know, it's strange that he would give up so easily, as opposed to, you know, Hans says, okay, we're back in business. We have the detonator. So he could say, okay, you go back downstairs and take care of that. I'm going to now try and find this guy and, you know, shoot him. And especially since, you know, his foot is bleeding so profusely, it shouldn't be very difficult for them to find him.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's leaving a quite handy trail.
Yes. Yes, he definitely is doing that. So, I don't know. That's you think that's a plot hole, or just something that they decided to keep here on purpose in order to, you know, move the story along?
I guess it's just moving the story along. I mean, you could argue that he's in a rush to get his things done. And as we mentioned in the last episode, they're running low on kind of goons and kind of terrorists. So maybe they figure he's injured. He's not going to do much more damage, but they need to get on with what they're doing. And there's only a certain number of them to do it. So they can't be running around wasting time looking for an injured policeman. So, you could argue that, but yeah, it does seem kind of flimsy. Like they could have quite easily just found him and shot him, and that'd be it. But yeah,
that's right. But then the movie would have ended at 100 minutes and we wouldn't have made it to the 132 mark.
Yeah. Although you could say the blood might not have been oozing out straight away, so they might not have been able to pick up the trails instantly. It was a big space. There could have been a couple of different ways he could have gone, perhaps. But yeah,
I don't know. Right. But I mean, the building is not that large, you know.
I guess.
But, yeah. Okay. No. That's fair. And then the shot changes, and we see a computer beeping, and it's a nice graphic for 1988. What they show us there, you know, just flashing on the screen. Electromagnetic seal engaged. No local access. And what's really funny is if you look to the right hand side of it, you know, you see a multicolored ribbon. You know, that's I guess a ribbon that they once used to use in order to connect computers and stuff like that. But if you're not really paying detailed attention to it, it looks like maybe it's a mask. You know, it's a COVID mask. It looks like that type of size.
Maybe,
someone just left a mask there, you know. Theo had to take off his mask. You know, he didn't want to get COVID. So it just looks funny the way that.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
The other graphic, which shows, you know, the all the different locks on the vault with all of these wavy lines around it. You know, and then it says electromagnetic seal, no local access. Still says the same thing, but they have like all the wavy lines are like moving back and forth, like showing that you really can't get into it, which is, it's just very funny visually to look at the way that they did that. And at this point, then we get a shot of Theo who says, "Hans, you better heat up that miracle because we just broke through on number 6. And the electromagnetic came down like a f***ing anvil." And then Hans responds by saying, "Have a look at what our friends outside are doing, and I'll be right up."
I like that moment as well. If you look, there's a very brief flash of when they first cut back to Hans of him brushing, presumably, glass from his suit, which is a nice little touch.
Yes. Yes. That's definitely true. So, first of all, it's a strange comparison that Theo would say that he came down like an anvil. Like, that wouldn't be the first thing that I would think of.
It has very comic book connotations, I guess.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. We're going to get there. Uh-huh. So what do you know about anvils?
Well, blacksmiths use them, I guess, to hammer out metal. That's about and they're used in classic cartoons to squash evil characters. But yes, they usually come back after being flattened, literally flattened.
That's very true. So an anvil is a metalworking tool consisting of a large block of metal, usually forged or cast steel, with a flattened top surface upon which another object is struck or, quote-unquote, worked. Right? So, first of all, it's not something that people normally would think of. You know, that's why it's strange that Theo is using this, is it? You know, they could be made of stone or bronze, sometimes iron. You know, when do you think people started using them?
Oh, a long time ago, I imagine.
Or let me rephrase that. When did people stop using them?
Stop using them? Well, I'd have thought some people might still use them or something right. Similar.
So there are references to the use of anvils in Greek and Egyptian writing. You know, even in Homer's works, there are some mentions to it. They have lost their former commonness because there are less smiths who use them than there used to be. In the 19th and very early 20th century, the method of construction evolved to produce extremely high quality anvils, right? But at the same time, you know, at the dawn of the 20th century, when they started using cast steel in order to make anvils, so it became something that was less common, that people needed to use it, you know, because of the various new methods of what they of the type of work that is done. So the handmade products, by blacksmiths and stuff like that are not as economically viable today in the modern world as they used to be. So, it's not really that necessary to have anvils. So, as you mentioned, there are a lot of different uses of anvils. Most of them we see in TV and film, right? It's quite often in cartoon gags. This visual metaphor is very common for Looney Tunes movies or Merry Melody shorts, especially those featuring Wile E. Coyote or the Roadrunner. There are other references from TV shows where they talk about it. Apparently, in the TV show Gilmore Girls, did you ever watch that?
I didn't watch it, but I've heard of it. I don't think it didn't make much of a splash in the UK.
Yeah, I never really watched it either. But it says apparently one of the main characters tries to have a conversation with someone else about where did all the anvils go, a reference to their falling out of use on a general scale. There are anvils are used quite often in books. They're mentioned there, mostly in medieval tales. A lot of times they talk about dwarves being blacksmiths who use anvils and stuff like that in C.S. Lewis's The Chronicles of Narnia. It's mentioned also in The Magician's Nephew and Prince Caspian. Those are two other books in the series that mention it. And obviously The Hobbit also mentions it. But now the thing that surprised me the most is that it's very, very common in music. And you are a music person. Did you know that they use anvils in making music?
Yes, you do sometimes get that kind of, there's a very specific kind of clang, isn't there, that they do use in music. There, yeah, I was... I'm aware of that.
Anvils are used as a percussion instrument. There's a whole bunch of famous musical compositions that feature anvils. Now, I can mention most of them.
Is it in Wagner? Yeah. Does Wagner use it? I think. Yeah, I kind of want to say Wagner.
All right. Well, I'll go through and you'll tell me which ones you've heard of. Most of these I haven't even heard of, so it doesn't really make a difference. But you might have. There's an extended solo for two anvils in Louise Anderson's Dimitri. I don't know what that is. In Atterberg Symphony No. 5, in the opera Le Macon, Alan Silvestri uses it in the theme from The Mummy Returns. Arnold Bax's Symphony No. 3. There's a Beatles song that prominently uses an anvil. Any clue what Beatles song?
Maxwell's Silverhammer.
There you go. Yeah. Very good. Very good. I never would have guessed that. I don't think I've ever even heard of that song before. And their roadie Mal Evans was the one who played the anvil in that. Then Benjamin Britten's The Burning Fiery Furnace. Copland's Symphony No. 3. In The Matrix, The Matrix by Don Davis, it's used. Brad Fidel uses it in The Terminator. Now that one, when I think about it, I was gonna say. As I'm like reading this, I'm saying to myself, I can actually hear that in the music from The Terminator.
Yeah.
The Song of the Lonely Mountain by Neil Finn at the end of The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey. You have the second suite in F for Military Band by Gustav Holst, which that features it also.
Oh, yeah.
Nicholas Hopper uses it in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. James Horner uses it in four different themes that he did. It's used extensively in Aliens. It's in Flight Plan, The Forgotten, and in Titanic. Metallica uses it in one of theirs called For Whom the Bell Tolls. Randy Newman uses it in Toy Story 3. Antigone by Carl Orff Howard Shore obviously uses it for the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and it's mostly used in the theme for Isengard. Okay, I can actually hear that one also, as a, if I'm, you know, when thinking about that. Let's see if there's anything else here that stands out. No, most of the others are
James Gold's
no. And oh, John Williams uses it in two of his famous themes. Any idea which ones?
Oh, John Williams. I can't think of where he'd be in one of his. Oh, I don't
Well,
know.
apparently it's in
Tell me.
Jaws,
Really?
which I
Ah,
actually just
wow.
saw Jaws last week on the big screen, which was really cool. But I didn't notice any anvils in it. And it's
No.
also in the theme for Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, then yeah, I guess that makes sense. Maybe the finale in that kind of lava planet out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Ah, that's right. Okay. Right, so it says here in practical modern orchestras, it commonly substitute a brake drum or other suitable steel structure that is easier to tune than an actual anvil, although a visibly convincing anvil-shaped prop may be shown as desired. Meaning they use something else, but they make it look as if they're using an anvil. So yeah, that's what I got about anvils.
There's the band called Anvil as well. They made a film about them. Did you ever see that?
No, I don't think so.
It's fantastic. It's well worth checking out. It's a
Actually,
documentary.
maybe I did.
I'm trying.
Now that you mention that, that's something that.
Oh, the film is just called Anvil. It's about a band, yeah, and the band is called Anvil. It's really, really good. It's like a real life Spinal Tap almost. It's
You know,
well, that's how it was
I
dubbed.
think
It's not
you.
quite, but it's.
Well, it was by it's by Rob Reiner, but a different Rob Reiner. It's not the same. It's ROBB. Oh, yes, I did see
Oh
it.
yeah, the band, yeah, which is a big
Yeah,
star.
I actually did see it. The truth is, if I think about it, maybe it's something you even recommended to me to watch. If
Possibly, it is very good.
I don't remember. I mean, I saw it a few years ago, but that would be really funny if it's something that you recommended that I should watch.
It may well be, may well be.
Well, that's very funny. Yeah, so it's a very strange comparison. No, sorry, it was someone else who suggested it, but it was Abby Osbitten. She actually recommended it to me back in. I watched it in 2017, so 5.5 years ago I saw it.
Wow.
So don't really remember that much about it, but yes, but it's a very strange comparison for Theo to be using. You know, the question is whether he's comparing it if he's thinking of cartoons. You know, that's why I'm saying it.
That's what would instantly come to my mind. I didn't find it that strange, as I say, but I did watch a lot of cartoons when I was a kid. So I do understand it, 'cause anvils have in the cartoons have a particular kind of speed and power and kind of it's just like boof, full stop to them. So I can kind of see it's an unusual analogy, but yeah, but not that out not that out
I mean,
there.
I like the fact that they cut back to Theo because they're once again reminding us that Theo is still in the mix. You know, he's still working. You know, every 10 minutes or so, they flip back to him just for like a few seconds, just to remind us that Theo is still hard at work. You know, and as the other terrorists begin to, you know, slowly die away, and then. You know, Hans, as you said, he brushes off his suit as he walks back into Holly's office, and he says, "We'll look at what our friends outside are doing, and I'll be right up." So I like the fact that they mentioned that this is on a higher floor. You know, because Hans apparently is on the 30th floor where the party is taking place. So, you know, I wonder what floor the vault is on, because you know, John theoretically is on the floor above that. So it's somewhere in the middle where he's hiding out.
Which could actually be seen as quite odd, because if you but by all accounts, by the design of it, that must be a very, very, very heavy thing, kind of a with all those multiple layers of giant metal doors and stuff like that. And so you kind of would expect it to be at the bottom, but obviously not.
Apparently not. And then the shot changes again, and we get to see we hear water running, and then we see John with his head up against a mirror, you know, breathing very heavily. And you sort of can see his knee bent. So, you know, he's doing something with his foot and water, you know, and then we hear on the radio, we hear our good friend, Al Powell saying, "Hey, John McClain, you still with us?" And he like takes a few breaths and then he picks up the radio and clicks it. And then it looks as if he does something in order to keep it turned on. You know, and I wonder if walkie-talkies have such a thing, as opposed to just having to, like, you know, like I know that when you go fill up, you know, at the gas pump for fuel, stuff like that. So you have that little thing that you can, you know, flick on in order to let it completely fill up on its own. You know, that you don't have to stand there and hold it. You don't have to hold the gun.
We don't get that in the UK. I wish really? We had that.
Oh, wow.
Mine's a pain. No. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's like
not in any that I've been to.
Interesting. Okay. So, yeah, at least here in Israel, they have them. And from what I remember when I was in the States, I did see that they had them. But, yeah, they did have them when I was in the States recently. And, you know, then we see John's finger and we see there's like blood all over his thumb. You know, so he must have like switched the walkie-talkie into a mode where he can still talk even though it's not pressed in. But I think the whole design of it is that in order for you to hear what someone's saying, you have to let go. You know, that's what's a little strange here. I mean, obviously the scene, you know, needs for it to be an open channel the whole time. You know, so John then answers, "Yeah, but all things being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia." So it's a funny line that he says that, you know, the idea that, you know, first of all, Al is calling him. I've brought this up many times, the fact that, you know, this is a party line. Anyone can hear them. You know, it drives me nuts that they're having these type of conversations, you know, that anyone can hear the vulnerability of the two of them. You know, and if someone's trying to gather information, they would hear the water running in the background, or maybe they would hear the echo of where he is or something like that. You know, if it was really important to Hans and Carl, they could probably find him a lot easier than, you know, than not. I don't know, but
yeah,
but we see all the different wires, you know, hanging around this, you know, not connected inside, you know, not like behind the wall or anything like that. The glass looks like it has like chalk writing on it and stuff like that, which tries to show, I guess, that it's brand new. You know, I think that's the idea here, that this is a room that is still being built, but, you know, which is why we saw all the grime and dirt on the ground and stuff like that. It hasn't been completed yet, but that still doesn't explain why there are all those newspapers. Haven't figured that out.
Well, if you're painting, sometimes you might put the newspaper out of your painting and just.
You think professional painters would be using newspapers as opposed to putting like a drop cloth?
Probably not. Probably not.
But, yeah, Nakatomi wanted to skimp a little bit, and they
got some cowboys. Yeah.
Possibly. Who knows? Just it's a little strange.
It is very
strange. Right, and so he has a funny line, and he says, you know, about that he'd rather, all things being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. But, like, why Philadelphia? That's, like, a strange, you know, you'd think he would say quicker that, you know, I'd rather be back in New York.
Mm.
You know, that's the thing.
It is a strange one.
Yeah. So, I know that you're from England, but what do you know about Philadelphia?
Not a great deal, I guess. Not a lot, to be honest. I know the name. I know the film Philadelphia. That's about it.
Okay. All right. So let's start with the fact that Philadelphia is the largest city in the Commonwealth or state of Pennsylvania. It is the sixth largest city in the U.S. It's the second largest city in the Northeast megalopolis behind New York. and is the 67th largest city in the world. Okay, it was I guess founded as a city as opposed to just a town or anything like that in 1854 when they actually set the full boundaries of it. And but it has a history that goes back even further, right? It is the US's seventh largest metropolitan region, and it is the world's 35th largest metropolitan region. The area around it has 6 million residents as of 2020, but the city itself has a population of 1.6 million people. Okay, that makes a little more sense. The Philadelphia was founded in 1682 by William Penn, who was a English Quaker. Okay, it served as the capital of the Pennsylvania colony during the British colonial era. And in the 18th century, it played a very historic and vital role in U.S. history by the because it was the meeting place of the founding fathers, whose plans and actions in Philadelphia ultimately inspired and resulted in the American Revolution. They had the first Continental Congress there in 1774. The city preserved the Liberty Bell, and it hosted the Second Continental Congress. Where they actually signed the Declaration of Independence. US Constitution was also ratified in Philadelphia in 1787, and it remained the nation's largest city until 1790 when New York actually surpassed it. But it was the nation's first capital from 1775 till 1776. And then later on, following the American Revolution, it was the capital once again from 1790 to 1800. While they were still building Washington, D.C. Okay, it is a very large industrial center and railway hub. It is also the home of many U.S. firsts, including they had the first U.S. library in from 1731, the first U.S. hospital in 1751, the first U.S. medical school in 1765, the first university in 1779, the first stock exchange in 1790, the first zoo in 1874, and the first business school in 1881. There are 67 national landmarks in Philadelphia, and it was the first city in 2015 to be named to the Organization of World Heritage Cities. A lot has happened there. Now, what movies can you think of that have taken place in Philadelphia?
Oh, it's one of those places I know the name. I feel like there's loads, but I can't think of any other than Philadelphia. And I'm trying to think what else. I'm sure there are, but I can't. None spring to mind.
Okay, well, first of all, the biggest one is Rocky.
Ah, sure, yeah.
Okay, and M. Night Shyamalan, just about every one of his movies takes place in Philadelphia. So you
Okay.
have, Unbreakable and, and its sequels that took
In
place
Sixth
there.
Sense, both is Bruce Willis.
Yes. Sixth Sense takes place there. National Treasure takes place there. 12 Monkeys takes place in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
Invincible with Mark Wahlberg takes place there. That's based on a true story. Have obviously, as you mentioned, Philadelphia, the movie Philadelphia takes place there. Shazam takes place there. The Revenge of the Fallen from the Transformers movie takes place there. The Irishman takes place there also. And I mean, there's so many more.
Yeah,
We're not
well, I
gonna we,
imagine.
we wouldn't have time to go into all
No.
of them, but because also there are a lot of movies that part of it takes place in Philadelphia and stuff like that. So, but I think we got the big ones. I'm assuming that there's some that I missed, and feel free to send me comments about things, movies that you think that we missed.
I do wonder if the line itself is maybe some kind of pop culture reference that is lost in time, maybe an advert, like a tourist advert or something. I don't know. Because as you say, it is a bit of an odd kind of line.
Meaning saying by I'd rather be in
Yeah,
Philadelphia.
like we said before, rather instead of New York or whatever, or the Bahamas or something like that, somewhere more glamorous. I do wonder if there's some reference that we're just not getting because
Um,
it's not
actually, you
1980.
are right. You were right. W.C. Fields said it.
Okay.
apparently it was okay. It's so W.C. Fields proposed that on his gravestone they would write, "I'd rather be in Philadelphia."
Excellent.
By implying that Philadelphia would be slightly preferable to the grave. The joke tapped a vein of critical commentary about the city in the 19th and 20th centuries. Variations of witticisms persisted in popular culture, but did not ultimately find a place on the entertainer's tomb. Fields often lampooned Philadelphia, the boyhood hometown that he left to follow a career in show business. So, okay, you're right. I didn't even think about the fact that that is possible that they were, you know, playing on some other, you know, some other phrase by him saying that. So, okay, that works. That works very good. and then he goes, then John continues talking to Al and says, "Chalk up two more bad guys." So have you ever heard of the phrase before, chalk up something?
Yes. I don't know where from, but yeah, I've heard that phrase before.
Okay, so chalking up something means to achieve something, such as a victory or to score points in a game. You know, which I find very interesting that they would mention that here. You know, by saying that it's like a game.
Yeah.
You know, by him saying, "Okay, chalk up two more bad guys." You know, by the way he says it, and then Al says to him, "Well, the boys down here will be glad to hear that. You know, we got a pool going on you." So you know what a betting pool is, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Right. It's a form of gambling. It can be known as a syndicate, a sports lottery, a sweep, or an office pool. I mean, I personally am familiar with it because we do an Oscar pool every year, you know, at the Lamb, which is a site that you and I are both connected to. So, pools.
I was gonna say I always do an Oscar pool with some friend, my brother and a friend of ours. We each put like only a small amount of money, like a fiver or something, like £10 is in maximum. We always have an Oscar pool too. So now I'm very aware.
Right. So I mean, most people think of besides what we mentioned about the Oscars. So most people have betting pools about sports, but people will have pools about. You know, but when people will die, okay, you have death pools, usually involving well-known individuals such as celebrities and sports figures, where the participants predict they'll die within a certain period of time. And then you have birth pools also involving individuals picking specific dates in which someone who can either be a celebrity or a friend gives birth. You know, so those are some interesting ideas of doing that. So the concept was actually introduced in England in 1923. And it was known as a toto and was based on football matches. Huh. So sports lotteries in England are now mostly known as football pools. Mm-hmm. And American sports lotteries do not often require contestants to purchase a lottery ticket or make an initial wager. And then in Canada, there are hockey pools. And in Australia, there are footy tipping. I don't know. I don't really know what that means. But
well,
a lot of people do betting
for football, I guess.
Okay, could be. All right. In March, when they have the NCAA men's basketball championships, so there are a lot of March Madness pools. They say that there are approximately 58 million Americans who participate in this contest every year. Wow, that's And then you have all the college bowl games that people, you know, bet on all the time. And wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, gambling is huge, huge everywhere, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the UK, the football pools, we just call them the pools. They're just, it's still quite common. Maybe not as common as when I was younger. It used to always be people talking about the pools. Now, I guess betting's more. There's many more things you can bet on. It's a bit more complicated, but yeah.
That's right. So as John is continuing to talk, we see that he's playing around with his foot. And we get to see the bloody foot at some point. And we get to see that what he's trying to do here is basically, you know, pull out some glass from his foot. at some point. And, you know, he's continuing to talk to Al, and he goes, what kind of odds am I getting? And Al responds, you don't want to know. And he goes, put me down for 20. I'm good for it. And then, you know, Al starts laughing. And, you know, he what's funny is that he has no clue what John's going through right now.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know how much pain John is in as they're having this conversation.
It's
You know.
I do love the kind of the whole again going back to my comments about the kind of strength of the characters, but Reginald Vell Johnson as Sergeant Al Powell, he is up there with one of the main characters, and even though he doesn't until the end, we'll get to that on another episode. But he doesn't necessarily do that much until there. But he's kind of always there as this kind of he's the one person that John can kind of talk to as a friend. And I can remember in the past people have kind of said that the main love story, the kind of main relationship of Die Hard is not kind of John and Holly. It's John and Al. It's kind of the film is their kind of love story, and
Yeah,
it's
okay, it makes sense.
yeah, and it's it's kind of it spends more time th those guys spend more time talking than John and Holly do, and it's their relationship blossoms in a kind of weird way, it's
Right.
yeah, which is
Sure.
interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely very true. And then you know, John says to him, he starts the conversation by saying, "Hey, Powell, you got flat feet?" Now, what do you know about having flat feet?
Is that to do more with it's dancing, like being? Am I thinking of more of two left feet when you're flat footed
Right.
and
Two
not?
left feet is when you like trip over yourself all the time. But flat feet is a postural deformity in which the arches of the foot collapse, with the entire sole of the foot coming into complete or near complete contact with the ground.
Makes
Okay,
sense.
and now the it there when what it basically means is that people have foot problems and it hurts them more when they're walking. And so therefore the whole idea is that okay, their feet are damaged and they can't perform certain things, right? So, for instance, you would say that athletic performances, right? So the effects of flat feet fall under two categories, which are asymptomatic and symptomatic. Individuals with rigid flat feet tend to exhibit symptoms such as foot and knee tendonitis and are recommended to consider surgical options when managing symptoms. Individuals with flexible flat generally exhibit asymptomatic effects in response to their flat feet. Okay. Being flexibly flat-footed doesn't necessarily impede athletic performance. It's generally assumed, though, by running professionals, primarily some physical trainers, podiatrists, and shoe manufacturers, that a person with flat feet tends to overpronate in their running form. Okay, so what, and so therefore they don't have a neutral gait with the way that they would run. With standard running shoes, these professionals claim a person who overpronates in his or her running form may be more susceptible to shin splints, back problems, and tendonitis in the knee. Running in shoes with extra medial support or using special shoe inserts may help correct one's running form by reducing pronation and may reduce risk of injury. So basically, if your foot is on the ground the whole time, there's the chance that it's going to hurt a lot and you're going
Sure,
to
yeah.
cause a lot of problems. So, but when you're dealing with military performance, so studies analyzing the correlation between flat feet and physical injuries in soldiers have been inconclusive, but none suggest that flat feet are an impediment, at least in soldiers who reach the age of military recruitment without prior foot problems. A 2005 study of the Royal Australian Air Force recruits that tracked the recruits over the course of their basic training found that neither flat feet nor high arch feet had any impact on physical capability, injury rates, or bipedal aptitude. Although there have been results rendered from military trials that have shown those with flat feet to have fewer injuries. Interesting. That's the opposite of what they said before.
Yeah.
that you have more of a chance of injuries. No current studies have been successful in fully ascertaining the chronic long-term detriments to health that are caused by the overextension and other compensating measures commonly enacted by the body during bipedal movement. Another divergent study of 295 soldiers in the Israeli Defense Force found that those with high arches had almost four times as many stress fractures as those with lower arches. A later study of 449 U.S. Navy trainees found no significant difference in the incidence of stress fractures among sailors and Marines with different arch heights. So again, it's pretty inconclusive as to whether it's really, causing any problems or not. So as John asked that question, the minute ends, and people are going to have to wait until Monday to hear the way that conversation continues. So is there anything else you want to say, David, about this segment of this
Yeah, I
minute
think
or any the
yeah,
movie in
I'm going to
general?
talk a little bit more about this minute. I think it's quite a memorable moment, the kind of foot thing. I think for me as well, I can remember when I was young, I was first getting into film. I used to get Empire magazine, so kind of the most popular film magazine in the UK probably was at the time. I can remember them having, I always love a good list, and they had I think it was the top 100 or top 50 most disturbing scenes in cinema. And this was actually in there, the kind of foot scene. And I think it's interesting. I always find this interesting in movies, how certain types of pain or seeing certain types of things happen to characters in films kind of have more of an impact than others. So, I mean, he's got glass in his feet. It hurts. It hurts a lot. But
It hurts just thinking about
but
it.
it's always strange how something like that has more of an impact. That type of scene in the audience, if you watch that in a theater, probably most times when you see him pulling the glass out of his toe, you'll hear people going like, oh, like wincing. Whereas in, like, I don't know, a horror movie or an action movie where people are getting their heads blown off and getting like we saw earlier in Die Hard, squibs going off, people getting machine gunned, it doesn't have the same impact. It's just like, yeah, whatever, brrr, mowing them down. But I'm sure getting shot with a machine gun hurts a hell of a lot more than getting a bit of glass in your foot. But it's that relatability, and this scene shows that really well. It's like people like Home Alone, some of the things in that, people standing on nails or whatever, and are standing on Lego or whatever. Like, it's pain that people can relate to is so much more impactful. Often anyway. And this is a good example of that. It also brings, without wanting me to go off on a tangent too much, but it does remind me of a little something that happened to myself. Because, like, at the start of this scene, you kind of see him. There's that trail of blood, and you might at first think, "Wow, that's a lot, an awful lot of blood just for what happened to him." But actually, I can remember once I had an ingrowing toenail. So I'm going to get a bit gross, sorry, but I had an ingrowing toenail, and I got it removed at the doctor's. Took it out, and just before I had the operation, I knew I was working. I think I had it in the morning, but I said to him, I said, because I didn't really know what to expect from this. I said, "Look, I'm actually working tomorrow. I'm going to be on my feet. Am I going to be okay tomorrow?" And the doctor said, "Oh, you'll be all right tomorrow. Yeah, you won't feel too bad tomorrow." So I was like, "Okay, cool." So I kept the work on, and had my toenail removed. And then the next day, I was filming. I was what I didn't really describe to the doctors. That was I was filming. It was actually a big, massive air show. So it was a huge space, and I was on my feet all day, like traveling around between different parts of the Air Force base and filming the shows and things like that. And at first I thought, okay, I can do this. It was a little bit painful, but then after about, I don't know, about an hour or something, I was starting to feel a bit funny, and also my foot felt wet. And that's when I took my shoe
Oh,
off,
wow.
and it was just horrific. My sock was just red. It was just soaked with blood. And it's like, I really should not have been moving around. So I can really relate to John
Wow.
in this moment. It's like, because it was feet can bleed. I don't think they can, but obviously your blood, I guess, I don't know, it doesn't quite work like this, but obviously I guess it's lower down gravity. I guess your blood gets pumped around. It doesn't quite work like that, but it was not pleasant. And the rest of the day, had my foot up, and I just stayed in the press area and filmed the planes in the air and stopped running around. But yeah, yeah, oh, so wow. I can always feel for John McClane at that moment with his bleeding feet, even though I didn't have glass shoved in it. It was still pretty great.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah, that's all. That's the only thing I wanted to say about that scene, really. Just how kind of like wince-inducing that glass moment is. It's yeah.
Okay.
And it's, that makes sense. Sorry, I will add. Like how it's, there's a really long setup for that, because and this happens quite a few times in the film. There's kind of quirky little jokes or quirky little things that happen early on in the film that you think are irrelevant, just there for comedy, but almost every time, like, it will come back later. So you have that random guy in the airplane saying, "Oh, when you get off the airplane, do your fists with your feet." And yeah, and
make fists with
John McClane does that, takes his socks off, does the fist with your feet, and you think, "Oh, it's just a random silly comment." But that all leads to this scene with the glass, and then the glass getting his foot. It's really nicely written in.
All right, so the script has a few little discrepancies, not that many major ones, but we're still going to go through them. So it starts off and says, as he passes the camera, we see his dragging foot leaving a trail of blood on the linoleum. And then it says, the vault room. Theo and Christoph react, delighted, as they get the message, sixth lock deactivated. Suddenly a buzzer sounds, and the graphic flashes, electromagnetic seal engaged. Cannot be disarmed at this location. Terminate sequence. Yes, no. And then Theo has his line. It's almost identical, but instead of him saying like a f***ing anvil, he just says like a sledgehammer. And that might have been something that Clarence Gilliard Jr. Added in himself to make it sound a little more powerful in what he's saying. And then when Powell calls John on the CB, he says, Roy, you still with us? Calls him Roy still. He doesn't call him John. And when John responds, he mentions Philadelphia, and then he says, chalk up two more terrorists, not two more bad guys. And then Powell says, the boys will be glad. We got a pool going on you. And then McClane says through his teeth, yeah, what's the odds? And then Powell says, you don't want to know. Suddenly remembering an NYPD course in first aid from 10 years ago, McClane removes the improvised bandage, checks the cut more carefully. And then it says, put me down for 20 anyway. I'm good for it. So what got you off the street, Al? You liked lousy coffee or what? So they don't even mention the flat feet at this point. So it's, I think flat feet works better, especially, with what we'll discuss next week. So that works as part of it too. That works well. Every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Surprise, where I will surprise my guest by asking a small little question. Now, Die Hard is a movie that has been quite controversial ever since it came out. And the biggest controversial question about Die Hard is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? So what do you think, David? Is it or not? And
it's a difficult one. I must admit, I do occasionally, I've watched it once or twice at Christmas, but purely because I'll have take any excuse to watch Die Hard. But in my heart, I think I would probably say no. I think for me, a Christmas movie is a movie that's more specifically about Christmas. This is set at Christmas. There's mention of Christmas, but it's not about Christmas. I think for me, a real Christmas movie has to have that kind of stronger connection. Although I guess, but then you could even argue stuff like Christmas Carol, which you'd think of as an ultimate Christmas movie. I guess that's not necessarily about Christmas, but it's about the values maybe of Christmas, though. And this isn't about the values of Christmas. I'm gonna stick with that. It's controversial because I love Die Hard, and I'm not one of these people who gets angry when people shove it in the best Christmas films of all time, because any excuse to kind of lavish praise on Die Hard I'm up for. But personally, if we're talking Christmas films, I want to be themed around the values of Christmas, or about Father Christmas, or about Jesus, or I don't know, something that is really about Christmas. So I would say no.
Right. Okay. That's fair. All right. Great. Do you want to, for the last time, tell people how they can find David Brooke.
Yes, they can find my rambling on about world indie classic kind of movies over at blueprintsreview.co.uk.
And while you're doing that, you go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, David, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed yourself as much as I did this week.
I have enjoyed myself. Thank you.
For everyone else, I will be back on Monday with a brand new guest. But until then, as David would say, yippee-ki-yay, kimo sabe.
Yippee-ki-yay, kimo sabe.